Welcome, welcome. We are back for another episode of The Lock-In. I'm David Lappin, and I am joined this week by GPI award-nominated author, Dara O'Kearney. Dara, welcome.
Thank you very much, David. It is very nice to be nominated for GPI Award, not just for the podcast, but the book. The book award actually went away for a few years. They lumped us in with the written media, and no book was ever going to win again. Because you know, people can just click on the link and read a 1,000-word article. But it's great. I think that every year there has been a book award, we've been up for it. We've never won it, which is also great fun because Barry gets his hopes up every year and then we don't win. And that's probably the most fun I actually get out of the GPI every year.
Well, look, our guest this week is a fan favourite, actually, of this show. She is a poker player and marketeer, joining us for the umpteenth times. Too many, I didn't even bother checking how many it was. Is the fabulous Kat Arnsby. Kat, welcome.
Hello. Hi, gentlemen. A fan favourite. I mean, that is really good to know, but it does make me slightly concerned about the psychological state of your fans. But
no, I said fan favourite. I didn't say fans, plural. There is one.
Oh, okay. Just one fan who happens to make generous donations to the Chip Rose.
So, okay, first on the agenda, Kat, a little bird has told me you will no longer have power over us insofar as we ever recognised you having any power over us. A hard-hitting journalist now that I am, I'm getting right to the point here. Are you changing jobs?
I am, Lappin. Yes, that is some really good investigative journalism,
thank you.
AKA you listening to me while I talk and we drink. But yeah, I will be leaving the fold of Unibet fairly soon. I can't really tell you exactly what's happening, but I can say it's outside poker, actually. My first ever job in my adult life that won't have at least a loose attachment to a poker room somehow.
Dara, how do you feel about that? We're losing Kat.
No, I feel very sad. I mean, Kat's been at Unibet all the time we've been there. She has been the one cracking the whip, literally and metaphorically. But yeah, Kat, you know, Kat's somebody that we've always worked very well with, and has, for better or worse, appreciated what we bring to the show, which a lot of people in the poker industry don't necessarily understand what ambassadors do or what benefit they can possibly have. I think she's also made us better as ambassadors too, by giving us advice at different points on, you know, the recreational perspective and so on. So yeah, very sad. And she did actually edit one of my books as well. So yeah, Kat is a wide-ranging figure, let's say.
She certainly is. I like the way you referred to the poker industry as the show, though. That kind of made me feel like show business. We're in the show. I like that. Yeah. Like that. Okay. Well, look, we haven't had a proper lock-in since November, actually. We did our lock-in vlog episode, of course, from the WPT in late December. But that's just basically me following Dara around with a camera, barking orders at him of what shirt to wear and where to walk. So that means we actually have a few stories that we wanted to cover, we wanted to delve into, but we haven't really done it yet. They're not necessarily current news. The first concerns Justin Bonomo's wearing of a keffiyeh in the poker room and how he was threatened with disqualification late on in the WSOP Super Main event unless he removed it whilst on the feature or final table. WSOP officials went on the record on this one to say the request for removal of Mr. Bonomo's keffiyeh once he reached the TV production table was simply a matter of broadcast clearance. Our future distribution platforms for Super Main Event do not allow garments deemed controversial or political in nature. Now, at one level, I would say that a keffiyeh is simply a type of decorative headscarf typically worn by people in sandy countries. Calling it a political garment is a bit of a stretch. It's akin to a paddy cap or a kilt, maybe. That being said, a keffiyeh being worn by a non-Palestinian has become a gesture of solidarity with the people of Palestine. So it being interpreted as political is probably somewhat fair. It's worth noting that Michael Adamo was also wearing a keffiyeh whilst he was in this particular tournament. He didn't go deep, though. I think he bust on day one. The problem, as I see it, is that a few days earlier, the WSOP ran a charity tournament for the widows and orphans of fallen IDF soldiers, and in doing so, made their own political statement, in a sense, at that festival at the Bahamas. Darren, I'm going to start with you, actually. What did you think when you heard this story?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because obviously GG can impose whatever rules they want, but it did feel that it was somewhat targeted in this case, specifically because of what he was wearing. In general, you know, Even before poker, I always felt that as much as possible, politics should be kept out of sport. When it's brought in, what tends to happen is you end up with, for example, like the two boycotted Olympics. But on this occasion, like the Café, as you said, like it's not like he was wearing a very pointed, you know, I'm not even going to say the words, but something to the effect that was very anti-Israeli deliberately. It was just an expression of sort of solidarity with the people who were being, you know, bombed on a daily basis at the time. So I think that definitely rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. They also pointed to the fact that at the same event, there was a charity event specifically for the Israeli Defense Forces, widows and children, which in itself is sort of a political statement, at least as much as a political statement as the wearing of the keffiyeh. So it seemed like there was a little bit of double standards there, to say the least.
Yeah, well said. Mike Matisseau and I guess this generation's Mike Matisseau, Ryan DiPaolo, went beyond the pale with their comments, the former suggesting that Trump should jail Bonomo, while the latter suggested that Bonomo was a terrorist. Nonsense, obviously, from those two morons. But that aside, the majority of the comments that I read were actually in opposition to the actions of the WSOP, who are hiding behind Section 54D in the WSOP rulebook, which states, and I love when Dara's response when I start reading rules out, host properties reserve the right at all times to impose a ban on any apparel deemed objectionable by host properties in its sole and absolute discretion. Host properties reserve the right to refuse entry or continued participation in an event to any participant who does not comply with the aforementioned apparel rules. My interpretation of this is that the WSOP have now made it clear that they deem the keffiyeh objectionable, while simultaneously making it equally clear that raising money for the families of Israeli Defense Force is irreproachable. Kat, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's just fucking hypocrisy, isn't it? Like, in terms of no political statements, right? If no political statements are allowed, which I tend to lean towards agreeing with Dara, just keep it out of poker, keep it out of sports. It's not necessarily the best place, but they're either allowed or they're not allowed. So I think it's quite clear hypocrisy. In terms of the rule, I mean, it specifically mentions items of attire. It's unequivocal. The operators of that tournament had the full right to make anyone remove any item of clothing. But that leads me on to my next kind of concern about it. At what point am I beholden to the, what was the phrase they use, our broadcast partners, our distribution partners? I mean, as a guest to the casino, as an entry to the tournament, have I signed to say that I'm any broadcast partner? What if that changes during the period of the tournament? So I agree to be held beholden to them at the start of the tournament, halfway through there's a new partner. Am I also now tied to them? What happens if those broadcast partners have said, well, we don't want any females wearing tops? Everyone has to be topless. You take your top off or you're excluded from the tournament. By their current writing of the rule, they could actually do that. Now, I'm pretty confident.
Now, hang on, Kat, this isn't the Battle of Malta, Kat. Back up, back up. This is not the Battle of Malta.
But this is what I mean. It indicates like a worrying undercurrent, which at its heart is agree with us or run the risk of losing your equity. And I think the worst bit about this was the timing. I mean, if you want to have a sign at the front that says no keffiyehs, then, you know, you make the choice. I feel like if they'd said to Bonomo just after he'd entered, you can't wear that, he'd have said, take your 25 quid and I can tell you where to shove it. But with, what did you say it was, like over £1 million in equity sitting there 16 handed. He was a vulnerable person. He was bullied while he was vulnerable. And he, you know, no, there isn't anyone I think who could walk away from that amount of equity as some sort of moral gesture. So they had him by the balls and they used that power. And I don't think that's a great brand advert, really. Play with us, because if we don't like your statements, if we don't like your identity, we will bully you into changing it or we will steal your equity, because that's what's happened.
Yeah, great points. I've got to say, none of this sat well with me either. Nor did it with the great pal of all of ours, actually, Barney Boatman, who put out a personal statement on the matter. I won't read all of it because Dara will go mental if I read things out again. But I will say that he said, every child orphaned by war is a tragedy, and I wouldn't fault anyone, particularly those with a personal connection, for wishing to help. However, I would hate for anyone looking at the poker community to get the impression that we valued the lives of sick, starving, mutilated, traumatized Palestinian children any less than those suffering tragic personal loss in Israel. At that point, Barney offered his first WSOP bracelet for auction, with the proceeds going to the Palestinian Red Crescent charity. Cass, actually, back to you on this one. What did you make of this gesture by Barney, and obviously his incredibly beautiful, heartfelt statement as well?
I think it just demonstrates who Barney is as a person. You know, we're all entitled to present to the world how we want. He didn't have to do that. You know, he didn't have to say anything, do anything. There was no requirement for him to have a response there. And I think it's great when people do stand up, you know, and in our community, money is important. It's important everywhere, but it is kind of like how you're measured. Your success is measured within poker is are you able to keep playing poker and winning over time? And Barney has been able to. And the fact that he would give something that's so coveted, it made a real statement. And I really like it. What I was disappointed, so in preparation for this interview, Dave, I just sort of reread some of the media from around this controversy. And actually only one place mentioned Barney's article, mentioned Barney's gesture, and everyone else mentioned Mike Mattisau's comment. So just as an aside, you know, could all the poker media outlets just stop giving a shit what Mike Mattisau thinks? I mean, didn't the guy spend time in prison for selling drugs to an undercover officer? Like, the, you know, no one cares what Mike Mattisau thinks. We don't need his tweets like quoted in every single article about everything, because he just has some completely insane ideas. So just more Barney, less the mouth Mattisau would be my vote on that.
Yeah, actually, I don't think people are too interested in what Mike has to say, other than maybe just laughing from a distance, because I don't think his apparently well-produced movie about his life and struggles and whatever got much sympathy or much exposure. Dara, I want to go back to you finally. I know, having spoken to Barney just ahead of this, because again, I was sort of keen, a bit like what Kat said there, to give a little spotlight to what he did, because I feel like it you know, it was acknowledged by a lot of people. It was a beautiful thing to do, but it didn't get a huge amount of media coverage. It actually has raised over 40 grand. I think the winning auction bid was 12 grand. It was matched by maybe Bonomo himself. I know Steve O'Dwyer made a donation, and loads of other people put money in as well, Barney included. And I suppose for me, at some level, Dara, and maybe speak to this if you can, you said there at the top, like, we should really keep politics out of poker for the most part. And I think that's absolutely right. But if we get dragged into it in the way that we did, and it was sort of ugly hypocrisy, I thought, by World Series of Poker on this one, I feel like Barney managed to sort of tie a bow around it in a way that ended up feeling balanced or palatable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody could disagree with that. Even people on the opposite side of the political spectrum, I can't really see how they would have a problem with Barney's gesture. It's clear that this is a, you know, on this particular issue, one side has a much bigger voice and a much bigger lobby, or at least a much more powerful lobby, let's say. And I think that's even reflected in, you know, your comments or Kat's comments that Barney's thing was barely mentioned, whereas Mike Mattisau's, you know, latest dumb tweet got center stage. I think even a lot of the media organizations are kind of like very reluctant to get to engage with the story because they know what side their bread is buttered on, and that's kind of an issue. Obviously, as players, we have a little bit more freedom, but even within that, like, you make the mildest pro-Palestinian comment now online, and you essentially unleash the army against you of online people. So a lot of people have just kind of gone like, I don't want to bother to engage with this. So in a sense, it is a very effective lobby as well. I think we are seeing that to some degree. And Barney, you know, he proceeded very nicely and very carefully through what was a real potential minefield.
Yeah, really well said. Really well said. Well, look, moving on to far more serious matters in world affairs. The GPI Global Poker Award nominations were announced last week. More trophies than ever before will be given out, as the organisers have expanded the number of prizes to 38 for the sixth incarnation of the award ceremony, which will be broadcast live on Poker Go from the Poker Go studio at Aria Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Five recipients, I should say, already know what prizes they've won. Poker Player of the Year is David Coleman. Mid-Major Player of the Year is Han Feng. Female Player of the Year, Cherish Andrews. Most weeks at GPI number one, our former guest, Jesse Lonas. And Poker Go Player of the Year, Jeremy Osmus. The majority of the remaining prizes have been voted on already, but the results will not be known until the big night, when poker fans worldwide will also get their say. They'll have their voices heard as they choose the winners of Best Hand, Best Trophy, Best Live Stream, and Most Entertaining Player. Other awards which will be bestowed upon deserving members of the community, no doubt, are Poker Icon, the GPI Award of Merit, the Hendon Mob Award, which I think may go to Dominic French, obviously, for his ridiculous achievement there. We had Dominic on the last chip race, and the Charitable Community Initiative to, I assume, whoever is hiring Kat for her new job. We are going to dedicate a future episode to diving into the categories in more detail. But what we might do right now, if you will indulge me, is quickly look at the people up for multiple awards. Awards darling, Caitlin Comiskey leads the way with four nominations. I think she may have had the most awards at the last three of these. She's up for Best X Personality, Best Short Form Video Media Content, People's Choice for Most Entertaining Player, and she will be defending her crown as the Best Short Form Content Creator. Kat, I know you're a big fan of Caitlin's, as Dara and I are too. I've always thought, though, that maybe given your background in the theatre, you have a particularly perceptive eye and ear when it comes to her output. It's obviously comedic, but there is certainly a bit of fancy dress and impersonation about it too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I like about it. We don't call it fancy dress. We would call it costuming, but we'll leave that there. Yeah, I think that's what I like. It's quite structured. I mean, for so long, poker content has been, I don't know, maybe the video equivalent of stream of consciousness, right? Just sort of wandering around with a GoPro attached to your titties, just kind of looking, oh, this is me. Here's my ace king. I'm going to four bet that. And, you know, and there is a kind of sameness about it. You know, some people are better than others, but the actual format has been a little bit predictable in terms of that sort of content. And then she comes out with costumes and scripts, you know, and like narrative points in the video and quite clear, skilled and trained comedic timing. And it's really obvious. And as someone who, I love the game of poker, but I've never been that interested in the maths and the strategy and the boring side, right? I just want to play cards and drink beer. So for me, she kind of provided that entertainment side, that more, you know, the kind of people like I do, I watch sitcoms and that's how I relax. That's where I get my entertainment. Strategy seems like work. Her videos seem like a TV show. So, yeah, I mean, I follow her on TikTok and I constantly stalk her page to see if I've missed any videos. I really enjoy her. I find a very likable person as well.
Yeah, she's always reminded me of maybe the aesthetic of something like French and Saunders, although she may not know that reference. It would be sort of the British version of a little bit of the way her comedy stylings kind of land.
Yeah, definitely. That's actually quite a good reference. She's young. She's younger than us by a chunk, I think. So no, she won't remember them. And she's American, obviously. So definitely no, she won't know who they are.
Well, Dara, here's a softball for you. Barry Carter is up for three. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh through the saying of that. But Barry Carter is up for three awards for Twitter personality, which if he doesn't win, I plan on storming the GPI headquarters. Best podcast with us and best book with you. What say you about the meme lord?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of torn on this because on the one hand, obviously, I love Barry and this does seem to mean a lot to him. So I think he spent the entirety of the last year basically plotting his campaign to win Best Twitter Personality with his carefully beams every day. It feels like it's his whole life now. It's very hard to get him to do any work on the books or on the site because he's too busy making memes. So I'd like to see him rewarded, but then on the other hand, I'm thinking, well, if he gets rewarded for that, then he's just going to do more of it. And also, as I said earlier, like the most enjoyment I've ever got out of the GPIs is just seeing how sad and crushed Barry is after our book doesn't win. So I'm kind of hoping, you know, if this happens in three different categories, this would be a whole new level of heart for Barry, and a whole new level of mirth for me, I think. So yeah, I
think it's win-win really... for me. It could be a bit awkward, right? Because if he's only been nominated before when he's paired with you, he could blame you. But like, well, I didn't win because Dara's rubbish. But now, if he's in a category on his own and he doesn't win, there's no one to hide behind, is there really? So,
Yeah, it's also quite funny when you look at that character, because he's the only non-American and he's the only man. So he looks like the DEI nominee in that category.
Yeah, it is. That's a tough category, bless him.
I love how your Schadenfreude, Dara, reaches the levels of I would like to self-sabotage my own chances so that he will feel the pain.
Well, yeah, we see the thing is, like, when it comes to books, like, there are two things that matter to me: how many it sells, because that basically means whether it was worth my while putting the time into it, and then the reaction of people who actually read the book. And you know, they are completely unaffected by awards. I mean, Barry and ourselves joked that in the days after we were nominated, we sold two copies of the book total, which I'm pretty sure we would have sold anyway. That's about what it sells in that period. So, you know, my perspective is, yeah, it's nice to be nominated for awards, but, like, you know, they don't really materially affect anything, and they're definitely not the reason why I do anything that I do.
Well, look, I'm going to be a bit controversial here and say that I think there's actually a bit of a problem with that Twitter X award insofar as it is sort of merged with the short form content category because it is one of the main platforms, obviously, by which the short form stuff is distributed. Taking absolutely nothing away here from Caitlin or Marley or any of the others, this prize, I think, should be about the written tweets, GIFs, and memes. And that, for me, is why Twitter personality must go to Barry this year. I think he is a lock. Kat, back to you. Also up for three is Marley Spragg. She's up for Twitter personality, best short form creator, and short form video. Do you like her chances?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, isn't it? Because it's not easy for me not to be subjective about these. And I would say I probably find Marley a little bit more hit and miss, but then, you know, her humor is different to mine. So, you know, if she has got a lot of fans, just being nominated in that many categories, I think says a lot, right? Like, you know, that she obviously has some reach. Probably doesn't as land with me as much. I think there's a streak to Caitlin. I don't know if it's like a real category, but she has this kind of genius silly, right? On a surface level, it's really dumb and stupid and just stupid wigs and silliness. But actually, if you listen, and sometimes particularly the T levels one, there's deep stuff under there, you know? So for me, I probably favor Caitlin, but yeah, clearly Marley has some strong output and she is very popular. And she is funny. I mean, she's got quite a caustic sense of humor, which I know is really popular.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, Dara, back to you for the last of the triple nominees. Joe Stapleton is up for Best On-Air Talent, podcast for Poker in the Ears, and book for his comic Trapped. I saw that you posted very, very complimentary things indeed about the other books in your category. Which, if any of these categories, do you think Joe might win?
I think he might win the book one. His book is definitely the most different and original in the category. Like, if you look at the four books that are nominated, there's, like, our strategy book, and strategy books never win. And then there's the Tom McAvoy autobiography, which is actually a great book. But I don't think too many people would have read it. Tom is kind of advanced in years now, so, like, a lot of the people who would maybe have voted for him 20 years ago aren't around to vote anymore. Nate Silver, you know, genuine mainstream success with his book. So it's actually an amazing category this year. I think we're very happy just to be in there. Like, there's obviously no way we're ever going to win. But I did say that I hoped that Joe's book would win because, well, first of all, he gave me a free copy of it in Barcelona, which is very nice. I always like free stuff. But it is very original, and it's, you know, all the other books you could compare them something. Our books, like any number of other strategy books, you know, Nate's mainstream book. Yeah, there's been lots of books about the crossover between poker and other areas. All very good. The ones we know, like Maria and Alex's books as well. And obviously, lots of autobiographies. But yeah, I think he's done something unique with the comic book format, and he's pulled it off very well as well. Like, it's not just hastily thrown together. So I'd like to see Joe win in that category, and, you know, hope he doesn't win podcast, obviously. And at the on-air, we have no dog in that race. So obviously, I think he's kind of similar to Marley in that category. The way Kat just spoke about Marley, he's sort of like one of the OGs. He's just been around forever, at the sort of top level. But yeah, the book one is the one I would like to see him win for sure.
Yeah, I personally love to see you and Barry take this one down for what was your sixth collaboration at the time together, not just because it's a great strategy book, but in a sense, it will be deserving recognition of the body of work you guys have done. But I do agree with you. I suspect it's maybe a two horse race between Nate and Joe. And I think Joe may win this one. And I think he's actually going to win On Air Talent too. He's a bit of an awards darling, it must be said. If we conflate this one with Best Broadcaster as a category, which I think it kind of just is replacement words for that. He's the only nominee in that category not to have won it before. Previous winners are Maria Ho, James Hardigan, Nick Shulman, Jeff Platt and Ali Najad last year, the latter three of whom are his competition this year. So maybe he just gets shared around. Maybe he wins it this year as well. Okay, next up, I've entitled this one Cat Loves Bots, but that's probably a little bit of a straightforward way of putting it. I want to talk about a video that dropped last week featuring myself and Kat on a Sigma panel a few months ago in Malta. It's on the topic of poker bots, ethics and innovation. It was hosted by friend of the show, Yvonne Montalegre, and I'm going to play a clip from it now.
So is there any positive outcome of using AI and bots? Kat, can you give us some insights about that?
I think so, yes. And I'm well aware I'm in the minority within the poker industry, but unfortunately, I do think we are facing a situation of utter inevitability. This technology exists. It's getting better, not because of poker, because these kind of tools are used in multiple industries. The frameworks within which they exist are improving. Infrastructure to tech stacks, such as AI, machine learning, which powers the bots, drives them, is improving. So we can bury our head in the sand and say, oh no, bots are bad, let's not interact with them. But actually it might be wiser to bring bots into the circle consciously, openly, transparently. Players know that they're playing against them. And not only do they play for the house, they now become a way to return that money to the players.
The reality of poker is that there will always be winners and losers. Everyone pays their 10% reg fee, or in the case of the World Series main event, it's probably something more akin to 6%. And then we battle it out for the equity that remains. In any environment, in any poker ecosystem, there will be better players and worse players. That will happen in a $1 field and in a 10K field. The better players will probably come out on top. But essentially, that's okay. We've accepted that from the outset. It's fine to have mixed ability in these fields. People can take their shots. There's a big luck factor in poker in the short term, and that will encourage players to, you know, take the opportunity to maybe play.
So, David, you said that we've accepted in poker there are winners and losers. You're one of the winners, so it's a lot easier for you to accept that. I'm going to lose either way. I work in poker, but I'm a recreational player. So if I am playing against bots that are owned by the house, I know they are bots, and they win money from me, the house can now give me some of that money back. If I play against a professional player, he uses that money to pay his mortgage, and I never see it again. So I think there is a place for bots, and as long as it is supported by absolute transparency to all players, I think it's probably the only future that online poker has.
I do understand that maybe it's unpalatable that, you know, for operators that poker players can take some money collectively out of the pool. The winners will take some. They prefer that money to just circulate and churn, and then they just keep it all eventually. And turning poker into that model is very problematic for me because, one, poker players are not like other forms of gamblers, in my opinion. They're actually quite different. They're, for the most part, sharper, for the most part, more value-hunting, and they appreciate a sort of a manu-a-manu idea of going up against other people as a contest. They don't mind paying their rake, but they want to feel like they have a chance. In this model that Kat describes, if you play poker and you get better, you won't now make your losses less, maybe become a break-even player, maybe even become a winning player. All that will happen is the site will deploy a better bot against you that will keep you losing at that minus 3% rate or whatever the house has chosen. And I don't like that. I think that will ultimately kill poker. There's a big trust element, I think, for the players. And this would actually extend as well to the idea that in poker, you have a situation where you get all your money in very, very good. You've got your aces against kings, and we're going to the river, and the king comes. Now, in that situation, for a poker player's psychology, it's very important that some human being took advantage of that, that somebody hit their two outer and they've now got your money. if that has got, if that money has gone to the house, that's very hard to take. Even if this is like an eGogra, you know, accepted or NG, I think that's very tough for a site to have that sort of system where a player is now going to feel like they got cheated. It was rigged against me. The house took all my money in this 96% in my favor spot. So I think actually you will see the decimation of poker under that model.
Yes, it's a very interesting moment for poker, very pivotal for the industry, because generally speaking, 5 years ago, we were playing against other players. Now we're playing against bots, players, so it's changing the landscape completely. And it hits the trust element for sure.
Okay, so the reason I played that clip is we only had 20 minutes or so to talk about the subject. There were two other panelists who exhausted some of that time. So in reality, Kat, you and I, we only had about 12 minutes maybe total and only got started, I think, on a topic that is very important and worthy of more discussion. So, Dara, since we both spoke there in that video, I'll start with you. Kat pushed back on something I said about poker players accepting that in any ecosystem that is created, big or small, there will be winners and losers, the better players more likely to win in the long run. We pay our rake or our reg fees and we battle it out for what's left. She said that that was an easy position for a winner to take, but maybe not so palatable for someone who loses. I actually disagree with that. And it reminds me a little bit of your recent piece about the different kinds of players and essentially what appeals to each demographic. Do you think there are players who deep down know that they're probably a dog in the game, but nonetheless, they enjoy the battle of wits with other people?
Yeah, I do for sure. Having seen the piece now, obviously, I'm a professional player, so my perspective, unsurprisingly, aligns much more closely with you than with Kat. I think something which people sometimes miss in the poker industry is that, you know, in the same way that in the American Constitution, the pursuit of happiness is enshrined, and people often take that as a right to be happiness, but it's really the pursuit. It's the right to pursue it. I think the pursuit of being a winner is an appeal for a lot of poker players. Almost all the players I coach, at least the recreation, started out as losing players, and through a period of study, self-improvement, etc., turned into winners. And that was kind of what I was getting at the piece. There's three types. You know, there's the whale type, which the poker industry has always been very good at recognizing, and recognizing that that's where a lot of the money comes from. And then there's the pros, who the industry has kind of gone backwards and forwards on whether they think it's a good thing or a bad thing to have pros in the game. But then there's the third category of like the smart recreation who actually wants to win, and he doesn't want to make his living from it. That's not his aspiration. He just wants to be as good as he possibly can at poker, and through study and discipline and game selection and all the other tools the pros use, turn into something of a winning player, either live or online. And that idea, I think, actually sells poker to a lot of people. The idea that if you do put in a bit of work at it and you figure it out, and there are other characteristics needed as well, you know, patience, discipline, temperamental control, all these things, then you can actually start making money from your hobby and your pastime. And I think that's actually vital to poker. I mean, I honestly don't believe that if we flicked the switch tomorrow and everybody was just playing against bots and we were all losing at the same rate, whatever rate the house had decided they needed us to lose at to make it sustainable for them, that people would just go, okay, well, that's fine then. I also felt that Kat's sort of, I mean, we've known Kat for almost a decade now, and Kat has always had this sort of fuck the pros idea that like you guys are all making money off the rest of us. And I sometimes think maybe she extrapolates that onto every recreational player, and that's not really my perspective. I do know other people like Kat for sure, and interestingly enough, almost all of them are English. I think it's a particularly English dog in the main strategy of like, well, if I'm not going to win, nobody should be able to win. But I do know lots and lots of recreational players who are genuinely happy when they hear about people winning. And you know, every time I get a big win, I get lots and lots of messages from recreational players, and they seem genuinely happy. And this is, I think that is part of the appeal of poker, that people can win at it. And I think when people watch Tritons, they don't think, oh, look at those guys winning there against the whales. That's disgraceful. We need to send in an army of bots to stop that. I don't think humans players actually by and large like bots. They don't even like players who are like bots. You know, they don't like the guys who just sit there and do nothing. They like the characters. They like the sort of personal human interaction that is poker. And I think getting us all to play against bots, that's just it's just not going to happen. People won't go for it.
Well, Kat, I want to bring you back in here. Obviously, you argue that by controlling the loss rates, because that's kind of what it is, at a reasonable amount, players get a better experience because their money lasts longer in theory. You know poker players, you know that particular customer in the grand scheme of gaming and whatnot. You've marketed them to them for years. Do you not think that it's more disincentivizing for a player to play knowing that if he or she improves, they will just lose at the same rate because a more sophisticated bot is deployed against them?
For some players, yeah. I mean, we're talking about profiles here, and some of the things that Dara said are spot on for certain poker profiles. They are largely not the most profitable poker profiles to the poker economy before we even start talking about the wider business positioning. So those recreational players who just like to play the knit roll games and have a nice little time and grind a few quid each month, that's lovely. It's a beautiful story. It's not a business model. So there isn't really a commercial environment where I can make that happen for them. Then in terms of the poker guys at the top end who are generating the poker revenue, right? And they are people of your class and higher buy-ins on bigger sites, they generate the poker revenue. So without them, there is no poker revenue in that sense, agreed. However, that is such a small portion of most operators' bottom line. It isn't going to be a prioritized commercial concern. So I get in my heart where you're coming from, boys, right? The purity of poker, mano in mano, and we only lose to another human and it's all psychologically better when it happens. It's just not commercially viable. So adjust and have some element to play poker, which suits me because I lose anyway. And yes, doesn't really help you guys, or have no online poker. They're kind of the outcomes I see. But a really interesting point, Dara, you mentioned people just don't like to play against bots. And it's kind of a thing that is just this sort of inherited wisdom, right? People just don't like bots. And actually, it might not be true. So there's a really interesting study that was released. It's just come out in the Psychological Review. I'll drop you the PDF in January this year. And it showed that people are meaner when they play bots. So they made people play a value distribution game against bots. And one group thought they were playing against humans, one group knew they were playing against a bot. And it was about who kept the money afterwards. And when the players thought the bot was going to keep the money, they were more selfish, they were less agreeable in the decisions they made, and they were less concerned about risk. So when the chance was they could keep the money or another human could keep the money, they made lower risk decisions. When it was a bot, they were like, fuck it, I'm just going to play. So it's interesting that you say they don't like it, because psychologically what people are showing is they're going to be better poker players against bots. Just if we extrapolate from that study, when a person knows, and it's transparency is key, when they know they're playing against a bot, all the negative traits that society doesn't like, but it's really good for poker, start to shine. So I'm not sure the old adage, people don't like bots, is reliable. You said at the top, Dave, cat loves bots. You're not wrong, buddy. They're a lot less work than humans in loads of ways.
Well, look,
Yep.
I obviously do. I get the maybe some of the logic behind why a study like that might produce those kind of results. But you know, to bring it back to you, Dara, down the years we've gone on and on in segments about poker's USPs, whether that's taking up space in the corner of a casino or if it's as one of the many verticals that a big gaming company might have. Those USPs are that it's a skill game, and that there are long-term winners, and it is aspirational at least to become one of them. In your opinion, and picking up on what Kat says, if you don't mind as well, can poker survive without that second element? If it is essentially turned into a losing activity for everyone, if the only sense of satisfaction comes from recognizing that your opponents are tougher, so that means you must have improved, isn't it kind of just like a video game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably can survive, but I think it's going to be a lot smaller. You know, different strokes for different folks. There are lots and lots of different types of people. But to go back to this study that Kat cited, like I wouldn't necessarily draw from that that because people play meaner against bots, they like playing against bots. I think it's actually the contrary. They don't want to lose to the bots, and that's why and that's why they adjust their behavior. You know, in my recent article, I talked about like I think it was my first or second sponsorship deal. I was hired by the company. They were on a skin. They were a skin on a network, and I was hired to go and coach a rich businessman who was by far the biggest loser on the skin. And you know, the site pulled out all the stops to the point where the owner of the site drove me down to his house, and I did coaching with him. And he had very little interest in the coaching, and I had no real desire to be there either. So I kind of said afterwards to the boss that like that was kind of pointless because like he's just having fun, he's splashing around. That's what he does. Like, what's the problem with that? And he was saying, well, it's a massive problem for us because what happens is he deposits 50 grand every Friday, he loses it in about 20 minutes. We have to pay the transaction fees on the 50 grand. We get back about 20 of that in rake, and we're losing a fortune. We don't want him to be a winner. We just want him to lose more slowly. So I completely understand where the whole idea of like getting people to lose more slowly comes from, but I still think that if that's the model, why don't we all just play money, or why don't we all just play on DTO
Or
all or
slots
DTO
that
Wizard?
actually most people do play. I mean, they're
Yeah, but
fully
I think the
are.
people who play
There's no
poker.
humans there.
Yeah,
The
but I think
people
the
who play poker are the same people who play slots. I mean, not
No.
all hashtag not all poker players, but yeah, there's a huge crossover. It's
There's a
you
crossover, but
work
they're
for a
still
brand
decent.
that has kept poker alive, has put so much resource into poker because of the cross revenue nature of those customers. And that's why I say that as much as I love you guys as friends, I can't make commercial decisions based on what you want. Because it's not a business, you are staff. I've said it for years. If you get a wage out of this industry, you're staff. You're not a customer, because you're not feeding the industry. So I can't take your business proposal of poker as it is now, with looking at somewhere around a 40% month-on-month net retention of acquired players. We are burning them, and they're going away, and they're not coming back anyway. There isn't a future in that model. It's slow decline. There isn't another outcome.
Yeah, but if what you're saying is true and they're the same people, then surely when they come onto the site and they see that they're losing at poker too quickly, then why don't they go on slots or bingo
They
or
do.
any of the other options they have? I mean,
Yeah,
that's the
they
way
do.
casinos in Vegas use poker. No casino really makes any money on poker. It's just to draw people into the casino, and then once they're there and they look around and they see all the other things, a small percentage of them or maybe a big percentage go off and play those other games. But they are different from the actual people who are there just for the poker. The vast majority of poker players I know have no interest in mindless gambling.
No, but they're not
And
very profitable
just
players.
to pick up on that, Dara, as well, like one of the things is there may be crossover. People who like poker may also like slots in some percentage of crossover. I absolutely accept that. But the games are not the same. The fundamental, attributes of the game are not the same. When you said, Kat, and I remember for years you making this argument to me about how it was unfair how a lot of gaming companies judged poker customers. And by poker customers, they meant someone who came on the site for 8 hours a week and maybe made 50 quid worth of investment in poker, and probably got back 35 of that long term, and paid 5 euro in rake, and they would then go off to the wheel for the last 10 minutes of their session every night and lose 50 quid, and therefore lose 250 to the house in a week, and only five of it was from poker. And you were like, no, but they should be judged as a poker customer because the reason they came to the site was for 8 hours of poker fun. Yes, they might have done their money on the wheel or in roulette or blackjack or whatever it was, but they came for the poker, and it was the fundamentals of poker which actually brought them there to do an activity that took 8 hours. And I remember you making very, very good arguments about how it was unfair the way sites didn't view those customers in that way, and that the poker product, if you like, deserved the recognition of that money, if you like, that the site made, because it wouldn't have made it without poker.
Yeah, it's a profile messaging problem, because what happens there in any normal segmentation is because their revenue is weighted to either sports or casino, they are automatically segregated as a sports or casino first player, which mentally they are not. They are a poker player and they will play a poker game. But if there is no mano a mano poker online, they will probably still play, as you say, the game mechanics against a bot, because they're quite happy playing against bots because they go and play against our slot machines, which are absolutely very simple bots.
But you're the implication here is that it's almost like poker is not viable as a product for companies to, you know, just offer it. PokerStars built their entire business for a decade off the back of poker. GG have arguably done the same, for better or worse, in various markets for the last 7 or 8 years. You know, like, clearly poker on its own can be worthwhile for a company.
That Bloomberg article shaved how much off the stock prices of the major floated operators? You can fight it, and I understand why this is a really, really difficult topic for professional players, because if you've been a pro player for 20 years, your bag of tricks in terms of wider employment is pretty limited. I mean, and if you are making some of your money from the online arena, the future of that does look real bleak, guys. And I'm just being completely flat as I can. It is not a future-proof business. Poker only as a primary revenue stream for an operator of any size is an error. That's why GG are flogging their casino. It's why Stars are putting all of their marketing resources into casino and sports. Poker is not a future-proof business growth model. It's just a fact. Like, I'm not trying to disrupt poker because I hate losing.
And because you're on your way out the fucking door.
Well, but I have to be, Dave, because I can't make people listen. There isn't a future in online poker on its current trajectory. Something major needs to happen. Now, I'm not saying there isn't a better idea than bots, but I tell you what, those guys over at Bot Farm Court or whatever, I think they had the right idea. I think operated as a legitimate business with transparency and people know what they're signing up for, I think they were on something. And maybe there is a better idea, but somebody needs to have it then, because just sort of carrying on and shouting operators going, put more of your bottom line profit into bot security so I can win. It's just not a business model. I don't know how else I can phrase that to you. I'd love it if it was the old days, but it's not.
Well, the first thing I ever paid money for online was backgammon. I actually did pretty well at one on backgammon. The reason why Party Poker was the first site that I played on was because I played on a site called Party Gammon, which is quite a funny name when you think about it. But
sounds like the new name for UKIP.
The problem with backgammon is that the game is completely solved, and therefore it was possible to write bots which played it perfectly, and they emerged very quickly. You know, almost overnight, you were suddenly playing against players who were acting instantly and never making a mistake. And guess what? Nobody plays backgammon online anymore.
Well, look, finally on this, Kat, I will give you one final word. My last sentiment in that video that we posted was how I thought trust was core. And I echoed this in an article around the poker bot stuff following Kit Shillelagh and Johnny Rabb. Poker bots, the call is coming from inside the house. I wrote this one back in October when I pointed out how sites were using liquidity bots and not being honest about the fact that they were. I also said that I didn't believe that a poker player taking a one-outer would react well knowing that the site benefited and not a human person. I think that leaves a bad taste in the mouth, which I can't see a way that wouldn't eventually erode confidence. So what's your response both on the issue of transparency and also how poker players would feel about a site that profited when a bad beat was dealt?
Transparency, just 100% transparency all times. Having house players of any sort, whether they're human or bots, on your site and not disclosing that to the customers is a disgrace. So, yes, I fully support bots on site. They should have names. You should be, as a customer, able to go and look at their coding to check them. So, yeah. Transparency till I die. Sorry, what was the second part of the question? Oh, the feelings. Poker players' feelings. Yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one because, again, I do wonder if it's a little bit of, you know, it's just what we sort of speculate, because winning players, you know, do they really care? Like, are they really upset when they get one outed? They know it's part of the game. The target players, the ones we want to play, I think there is a period of shift, but I think it's the right time for poker bots, because I think that mental shift is happening in a much wider instant. 10 years ago, we didn't have a good old chat with AI agents the way we can now. I mean, I have full-on conversations with ChatGPT. I think that Overton window is shifting, and you've got to remember, we're old, Dave, like, we're over 40, so in terms of future.
I don't appreciate being lumped in with people who have conversations with ChatGPT because okay. they have no friends. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it. Because it's a great friend. It's a great friend. If I get bored of it, like when you're talking to me and you're boring me, I have to let you finish. You know, it's polite. So when ChatGPT is boring me, I go, GPT, shut up, move on, next topic. So I think there's a massive cultural shift coming in terms of AI and bots, and it's probably the right time. I do agree. If I tried to come out with bot online poker 10 years ago, it was completely dead, no end. Now, I think there is a shift, and these Gen Zers coming up, Dave, they're not scared of bots. You know, look at the loot box site. That's my favorite example to say people have changed their mind about playing with bots. I don't know if you know what they are. So you pay for a box. It's a loot box. It's a digital box with a piece of loot in it. It could be absolutely crap worth 5 cents. It could be a brand new Rolex worth 50 grand or whatever these things are. And you can go and set one up yourself to play against bots, and you can actively select the bots, and you can see all of the other ones that are running. There are hundreds of people on there just playing against bots that they've chosen themselves. So I don't know is the answer. I don't know how people feel. I don't think there's enough research to rely on to make that kind of guess. But my instinct, if I had to make a pitch to an investor today for my bot site, I think the future is changing with regards to how humans interact with bots.
Alrighty. Well, look, before we go, I want to give a quick shout out about a few Unibet things. The next lock-in will be from the Unibet DSO Barcelona, which I'm anticipating will be a huge event. Unibet are also running satellites for the upcoming Dublin Poker Festival. That's at the end of February, specifically the 570 European Deep Stacks. Dara is a former winner of that one in the heyday of his career, early days. And the 350 ACOP. Those are on Sundays, both satellites running on Sundays. They're 50 quid into the 570 and into the 350. It remains for me to thank our fantastic guest. She is in many ways party gammon herself, Kat Arnsby.
I'm going to change all my social media handles to party gammon now. I think it suits me. Amazing.
And Dara O'Kearney, thank you so much.
Thank you, David. Fun as always.